Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Espionage Act. President Woodrow Wilson, State of the Union, December 7th, 1915, asking Congress. There are citizens of the United States, says the president, I blush to admit, born under other flags, but welcomed under our generous naturalization laws to the full freedom and opportunity of America, who have poured the poison of disloyalty into the very arteries of our national life. The president goes on to say, such creatures of passion, disloyalty, and anarchy must be crushed out. They are not many, but they are infinitely malignant, and the hand of our power should close over them at once. And the president goes on to ask for what we now call the Espionage Act. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, who's here to help me understand the events of these last days when this Espionage Act is mentioned repeatedly when it comes to the former president of the United States, Donald Trump. I mention at the same time that tweeting within these last hours, from Wilson's address to the Congress in 1915 to Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky's address to the world in 2022, Senator Paul is calling for the repeal of the Espionage Act now, calling it egregious. Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution joins me, my guide on matters to do with the federal laws, especially the Espionage Act, which not only remains on the book, but is now being debated on television and around the world in newspaper headlines. Professor, a very good evening to you. What was the Espionage Act that upset Wilson and that it's upsetting Rand Paul? Good evening.
Okay, well, they're very different oppositions. Let's just start with the motivation. As you mentioned, the target of the espionage was foreigners who became naturalized citizens in the United States. And this meant that there were many immigrants came over. Many of them were Jewish. They were very vocal. They were socialists. The most visible illustration of that were the Yiddish protesters in a case called Abrams against the United States, who essentially protested the war against the Germans and said that, you know, we have allies with Russia and all sorts of complications of that sort. And Wilson wanted this statute to get there. And indeed, he did get these kinds of people. And they were met with a First Amendment objection, which failed at the time, but generally prevailed in the years that followed it. The argument was that these were just speech acts, and they did not pose a clear and imminent threat to the United States. There are lots of things that would have to happen between the speech utterances on the one hand and the actual harmful conduct on the other hand. And so people were just genuinely puzzled as to whether we should or should not apply. But today it's a much more benign statute, and the only cases that have been brought recently have been against Assange on the one hand and Edward Snowden on the other hand, whose disloyalty to the United States and the release of confidential documents cannot be denied. The basic prohibition of the act is twofold. It says you cannot injure the United States by your actions, and you cannot benefit the foreigner. Generally speaking, if you're talking about spying, you're going to probably do both at the same time. And the question is, is this a good or a bad statute? Well, the problem with the Rand Paul position is you strike it down, it's like defunding the police. What do you do? There were many convictions under various forms of the Espionage Act and the Smith Act for activities that took place in the aftermath of World War II, where, in fact, there were people who were guilty of spying, espionage, and so forth. And certainly one doesn't want to have a situation where if the Rosenbergs or Al Jahis released vital secrets to the Soviet Union, we would be helpless to prosecute them under federal law. So I don't think that you want to do that. I think what you really want to do is to ask, should we modify it? Should we protect it? Or should we reject the case? Now, the Trump case is a complete bafflement to me. You start off with the a basic proposition, which is you either have to injure the United States or benefit some foreign power to the detriment of the United States. What did Trump do? The allegation is that he possessed various kinds of papers. Well, did he release these papers to anybody? Did he talk about their contents to anybody? Did he try to take this information that he had in his possession and turn it against the United States or share it with a foreign policy? As best I can tell from the newspapers, they were just sitting in a room, and at the request of the federal government, he put a lock and key on that particular door so that things wouldn't stray. We have no idea what's in those particular papers. They may be classified. That may not be relevant at all. But at this particular point, the difficulty that one has is that even if you take a broad construction of the Espionage Act, we have yet to see the charges that are going to be made pursuant to that particular act. And there's nothing in the search warrant that was given forward which says anything other than that these documents were classified or contained top secret information or something of the sort. There is no allegation that Trump was in the midst of doing any kind of activity that might have compromised the United States or benefited our enemies. So at this particular point, the usual argument is not a legal one, although it's partly that. It's, why are you doing this? If you just ask him, he would turn them over. And then the rest of the argument, this is going to be a huge fight over the question of whether there was a probable cause, because if he's just holding the document without committing any kind of crime, you don't have a probable cause to do anything in terms of getting a search warrant. So the whole case, it seems to me, at least on what we know today, has been bungled, and everything that the attorney general says doesn't clear anything up. It's not enough to say that the president is not above the law, that is President Trump. It's also the case that Mr. Garland is not above the law, and that the FBI head Wray is not above the law. Nobody's above the law. The issue is who violated the law in terms of the kinds of activities that were going on. And so my skeptical nature is, generally speaking, you presume innocence even at the investigative stage, and therefore require not proof beyond a reasonable doubt, but something much less, probable cause to get this thing going. Not clear if you read the warrant that they have anything to go on in this case. To say that some of the possession of these documents contains dangerous information does not, I think, allege a violation of the Securities Act, and it would be crazy, or the Espionage Act rather, be crazy to prosecute this on the grounds that there's a fight that you have with the National Archives and Records Association. That's not the kind of stuff which would lead you to give an unprecedented search warrant against a former president of the United States.
Therefore, Richard, it's a puzzlement why the espionage is being mentioned by the Department of Justice. I'm clear, it's clear in the headlines, and the headlines reflect information given specifically to the New York Times, the Washington Post, from what are said to be good sources in Department of Justice or in other authorities. Why are they bringing up an espionage act that you've now evidenced so clearly doesn't apply?
Well, it certainly doesn't look like it applies. Look, there's also another feature which I think is very troublesome. You mentioned, and I will take it as true, that it gave this information to the New York Times and the Washington Post. These are not known particularly as pro-Trump outfits. In fact, everything he's done, they've deplored. If you're going to release this information, you do not release it selectively to people who are aides and friends of the administration. You release it generally so that everybody can comment on what is going on. So that kind of under-the-table activity only increases the suspicion that there's some degree of irregularity associated with what has happened. I mean, what somebody has to do is to get up to you. Donald Trump had this kind of information. We can't tell you exactly what it was, but he gave it to a foreign power to allow them to improve their anti-missile capabilities in dealing with American weapons, or to aid the Chinese in a potential invasion of Taiwan or something like that. We haven't seen that particular part of this. So what's going to happen is, the liberal people are going to get more and more incensed because it's Trump, and the conservative defenders of Trump, they're going to get up on their due process horse. And at this particular point, it seems to me that they have the better of the argument. It's just all kind of a crazy. And, you know, you look at Merrick Garland and think that this was a potential Supreme Court nominee. He seems disoriented and he seems utterly irrelevant to the struggle that's going on. I can't believe that he's in charge of anything inside the Justice Department because he has not been forceful or clear enough in his public statements to lend any confidence that one has in either his leadership or his judgment.
So your measure is this Espionage Act conversation will go away because there's no There's nothing for it to hold on to. If the president, the former president, doesn't share documents with a foreign power, it would seem to be irrelevant. Now, Assange, that's an allegation. I understand that. Snowden, that's an allegation. I don't believe that was the allegation from our youth, Richard. Didn't the Espionage Act first come up, to my memory, when Daniel Ellsberg was said to have released the Pentagon Papers?
It certainly came up. It did. It's there. There were, I don't remember. Some of the post-war prosecutions were under the Smith Act, which was relatively similar, having to do less with espionage for foreign nation and more with internal disruption inside the United States. Ellsberg was there. But, of course, that was a release of public documents in connection with the Pentagon Papers. And the argument that was made at that particular point is you have to do a balancing act, which is if you're releasing information which will inform the public debate, that's all to the good. If you're releasing information that will compromise military operations and the like, it's all to the bad. Most of what Ellsberg released was a crashing war. You actually sat down and tried to read it. And most of it had to do with events that had taken place far back, the immediate past, having nothing to do with current military operations whatsoever in Vietnam. In this particular case, there's no speech that's being alleged of any sort. So it's not even clear that you have a First Amendment issue in this case, let alone a First Amendment defense. It's just the whole thing seems to be, I didn't do what you said that I did. And in order to prove that, what they can't show that, look, that he says he declassified the operation. Well, the president can propose that they be declassified, but he can't do it unilaterally. That he can't release anything unilaterally. This is a very complicated web, and I'm sure he would have been happy to release a lot of the stuff that was charged against him in connection with these various investigations, the Steele papers and so forth, but it's not his to do unilaterally. And what's interesting about all of this stuff is if you go back and then ask just one simple question, forget about how much you hate Donald Trump, is there any allegation that in connection with any particular transaction, he engaged in an improper prosecution of any one of his political enemies? Did he sue Adam Schiff? I mean, did he go after Mueller? As best I can tell, no. And this is going in the opposite direction. And if this becomes an indictment, it will dominate the next months, indeed years. It will probably force Trump in the following way. He will then surely commit to running for re-election as a kind of act of defiance and protection. And this country could be in a terrible political situation, bitterly divided over an issue which probably should have never come up at all.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, commenting on the little we know right now about Woodrow Wilson's genius in 1915, becoming a law in 1917, and now countered by Rand Paul in 2022. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.